This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
What did the game last night mean for the Browns? Because I think a lot of people look at what the Eagles did. They better not get any wild-ass ideas. Oh, it's a second-round project quarterback named Jalen that played at Alabama. Don't you do it, damn it. Don't you dare do it. The only thing them guys have in common is that their names are Jalen and they happen to play at Alabama for a spell. That's it. That is it. I don't want to hear a damn thing about it. No. No. Don't. No. Don't do it. No. I told you already. Just not. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to work out. No. But I listened to a little bit on the way in some different opinions and things like that. And I did. I read Kevin Clark, and Kevin Clark had brought up that he was going to write a big analytics piece in the he said ESPN. Now I forget where he was at the time, but he was going to write a big analytics piece, and he was going to visit the Eagles after they won their Super Bowl with Nick Foles and Doug Peterson. And it really wasn't based on analytics. Like, he was surprised that there's we use analytics. We have to use it. Everybody has to use it, but it's still common sense. Like, you got to get studs in the interior offensive line and the interior defensive line. Like, you still have to have those guys because they cause problems. And I think in a lot of ways, when you watch the Eagles, it's just common sense. Like, everybody's lining up to go after the Eagles when they were 2-2 to start off the year, and whether or not Nick Sirianni was going to be fired. But here it is. It's inside out. You have a quarterback that is probably a top 10 quarterback. Would you take him to throw your team on his shoulders as compared to some of the other guys in the league? No. No. But I think yesterday you saw, like, one is a really, really, really good roster. The other one has a couple of guys and the best quarterback going right now. And the team that had a really, really, really good roster was able to get after that quarterback because it's the ultimate team game. They were able to do that last night with suffocating defense.
Yeah, I wondered last night, and I want to be fair because I thought Jalen Hurts played really, really well and poised. He obviously was facing a much different defense than, you know, obviously what Patrick Mahomes was going up against.
Yeah.
And it seemed like, again, Saquon Barkley was huge in picking up every single blitz. It was like having another offensive lineman. But I did ask myself while I was sitting there watching this blowout of a game, how many quarterbacks would have won with Philadelphia yesterday?
Probably top half.
I feel like a bunch.
Top half. I mean,
like a Baker Mayfield. have won the Super Bowl last night. I feel like he
could. With Philadelphia,
yes.
Yeah, in that game, But I think he's a top 15 quarterback this year.
Yeah, he was.
I don't want to start a big thing about Baker Mayfield. So I think it's harder to do what the Eagles are doing. I think that when you watch what the Eagles have done over a period of time, I mean, this is a team that's been judicious in how they've chosen players. They've been able to find their way back in. I think that it's, I think it's so difficult to do that because when you have a guy like Mahomes, or you supposedly have a guy like Burrow or Lamar or Josh Allen or any of the usual suspects, it's like I always give myself a chance. With Jalen Hurts, I think that there's always like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think that's a harder way to do it. I respect the Eagles for what they did. I just think it's a harder road to go down. I'm not putting Jalen Hurts in Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer territory, Jeff Hostetler territory. Like, I'm not doing that with him. I think that he's a top half quarterback, but he's not Mahomes. And his defense was able to play to an exceedingly high level.
Well, I do wonder with this year, kind of the refrain from a lot of fans is it's the return of the running back. It's the return of the running game. And then you saw a team win the Super Bowl yesterday that had a quarterback that could have been interchangeable. And again, not say he didn't play well. He did. But you feel like you wonder, will there be an overcompensation now? Will a bunch of teams think, hey, we've got to go get the top running back in free agency. And we've got to draft, right? Even though this is a stacked running back class in the draft. Do we need to take those running backs early in the first round? The experts would tell you, no, you can get great running backs in the third round this year.
Yeah.
But do you think now that it's always a copycat league? Do you think the league will revert to that?
Well, I think that's what a lot of fans are going to want to do. I don't think the league is going to do it. And the reason I don't think the league is going to do it, because as long as you have owners that still like to make a lot of money, I think they know that quarterbacks make them the most money. And they're the ones that they could put on the billboards. They're the ones that calm everything down. They're the ones that cover up for any of the discrepancies that might happen in a franchise. And that's what makes these guys desperate for it. So, yeah, I think that quarterbacks are always going to go at the top. Like, I don't think that your draft is going to start whether the Browns – I don't think they're just going to stay at 2 and take Abdul Carter. I think that they'll move down somewhere and take Abdul Carter or Mason Graham or something if they're not going to go after the quarterback. But I still think the draft is always going to be QB, QB until there's no top-end QB right up there, and then the rest of the draft starts. I still think it's going to go that way, whether it be because of owners or because we really know just how important good quarterbacks are. That's why I don't want last night to fool us. Like, Jalen Hurts himself was saying defense wins championships, and I cringe at some of that because it's like, man, I've had a good defense before, and we've been a playoff team, but we were missing. I've had a good defense before. I think I've had a pretty good defense even this last year, but you have an offense that makes you look terrible because you turn the ball over like crazy. I need guys to be able to protect the football, make the right decisions, make the right read, and be a good, competent quarterback, and be able to get the ball out to different people. I think that this was a year where I don't need Superman as a quarterback. And I think it maybe have been that way the last couple of years. I think that we might have been blinded by Mahomes. But I think that right now, if you make the decision to say, hey, we're going to do everything else except find the quarterback, I think that you're making a sincere mistake. And I think you're not going to have the chance to draft your quarterback if you're one of these other teams. I think the Browns are up against it right now, but I think that a lot of people might make that mistake because of it. JD in Akron, you're first up in the Fan.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hi.
I don't know what you guys were watching last night, but I mean, other than that one interception he threw, I think Jalen Hurts played lights out. I mean, he was playing at the highest level that the league can offer, which is the Super Bowl. I don't think any quarterback could have done it. I mean, you're talking about an entire season. It's not just one game that Jalen Hurts played. I mean, the entire season he's been playing lights out. He's a phenomenal quarterback for a reason. He's got that number one on his jersey for a reason, boys. I think you got to give him a little bit more credit.
So if he wore number 15, would he be the 15th best quarterback in the league?
Well, what do the stats say? I mean, I don't think so. even like you said about Baker being a top 15, I don't think Baker could have got it done. He choked in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it's just you're talking about the highest level that the league can offer is the Super Bowl game, and that's where he's at. And he shut down a third repeating team in the Super Bowl. He played lights out. Other than that one pick, that one interception, I think he played lights out.
I thought he played really well. Listen, it's not a knock on Jalen Hurts, JD. Thank you for the call.
I just thought his job was exponentially easier than what Patrick Mahomes' job was.
He didn't lose the game for the Eagles.
Yeah, like... I thought that
I don't think he went out and won the game. They didn't win despite him, but he didn't go out and win the game for him.
And he was good. I don't think that caller started out with. I don't know what game you were watching. We all acknowledged that Hurts was really good yesterday. He only had five incompletions.
When he had the ball control, he did. He kept the Chiefs off the field in the first half, especially.
If Jalen Hurts had to play from behind, I would have given them no chance. He was playing from ahead. Yeah. It's a totally different story. Now he can use his legs. Now he can. He can keep drives, you know, extended because of that threat that he always has been. Because, you know, it's interesting. Saquon Barkley didn't really run the ball that good yesterday. I thought Chiefs tackling was excellent. They didn't allow Barkley to get that huge 60-yard run that we had seen was a trademark of them during the playoffs.
Yes.
So I give Hurts credit. We went into the season. I listed earlier in the show, like, he was the 15th ranked quarterback, NFL.com, going into the playoffs.
The pass he made into the end zone, though, the big one that just the dagger up there was a spectacular pass.
Let me get to Michael in Cleveland. Michael, you're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
So this is what I think of it. I mean, they have a above average quarterback. He did a really good job yesterday. Kind of remind me of, you know, when the Ravens won, defense was king for them. Good running back. You know, underperformed because their defense kind of swarmed on him and didn't think that they put it on the quarterback's shoulders to have to win it. But there was something that I heard yesterday after the I was on a podcast listening to. They turned it around on their team because they hit on four of the first six, I think five, of their picks as rookies last year.
Yes.
They were all played in tremendous roles on the team that made noticeable changes on the team this year. That changes everything when you can start having, you know, let's just say 85% talent on a lot of positions that you're paying low money to, that you can invest in a running back the way that you did. The culture is there. They've been building the culture. But, dude, it started with, you know, the quarterback was good, but those draft picks, that defense is the one that changed everything. And, you know, watching it yesterday, I was thinking, okay, how did this defense compare to the Browns defense from 2 years ago? Because 2 years ago, everybody was force-feeding me how great we were because of the numbers. But Houston kind of shut that down on us and how easily that they were able to manipulate our defense. I don't know if sometimes, like, what I'm watching and what I'm being told, which is, like, them having the best defense of the Browns 2 years ago, and then watching the defense that was on there that was successful, not a bunch of, like, super names, but just people playing their positions correctly and doing the right job.
I don't think that the Browns, and thank you for the call, I don't think the Browns have a lacking defense. I think that the Eagles' defense is so much better than theirs that I think it might make you a little bit more upset about the Browns' defense than what we should be. Like, and there's guys that just were not contributors here over the last couple of years. That's absolutely true. But, like, when I talk about the Eagles' defense and what Howie Roseman's done, I mean, this is a guy who's been a successful general manager for a long time in the league, longer than what a lot of guys get to do. So, yeah, you get to build, and you get to build the culture. Like, there was Fletcher Cox, there's Brandon Graham. So you can take chances on Jordan Davis or Jalen Carter when guys fall to you or something like that. Like, you're able to do that, and you're able to bring them in. And because you have leadership in the locker room, you're able to do that as well. And there's guys that you don't have to hurry up and speed up and play before they're ready to play. Cooper DeJean did not start the season. I know he was injured, but you didn't have a guy who was ready to start the season. Then he comes in later on, and you're able to bring him along. Milton Williams was a guy who was not a starter, started to start games, play well over the second half of last year, and then had a great 2024. Is probably going to be able to make a lot of money for somebody. Like, these are guys that they're able to, with common sense, take, develop, play within their system, and win with. And I think that that's what every NFL team's trying to do, and I hate to say it because I think a lot of people are going to hate me for saying this. I think that's what Jimmy is trying to do with his general manager as he has right now. Because I think that if he's trying to see what the Eagles are doing, that's what he's trying to build. I think it's completely different, obviously. One team's 3-14, but I think that's what he's going after.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hopefully looking forward to Myles Garrett staying with the Browns and them finding a quarterback. We'll see how this all works out. You know who can answer all these questions for us? Aditi Kinkabwala at A Kinkabwala on Twitter. She's from CBS Sports. Aditi, good morning to you.
Just set the bar high, right? Answer all these questions? Really?
Yes,
you think
absolutely.
I have all the
yes. Well, you gotta,
oh, come on now.
You got to calm us down. We're excitable boys at this time of year. You know, we're getting nervous. I do want the Browns and Myles Garrett to work it out. I don't know if they're going to be able to. How do you see this playing out, Aditi?
It's funny. I was talking to a coach of another team in the division yesterday, and he said a player always wins this. And you know what? In fact, I'll quote that Mike Tomlin line that a lot of coaches have now used, that teams want volunteers, not hostages. I don't know, though. I think that if the Browns can give a good, solid plan at the quarterback position, there are still a lot of pieces in Cleveland that, I mean, look at what happened last year with, not this past season, but the year before. You know, this is still a team that can do some things. The quarterback position is just very, 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 very frustrating. And it doesn't, I can understand Myles Garrett's frustration. It was very palpable to us during the season last year when we had the Browns. Earlier in the year, he was talking to us, and when I say us, our game crew, about all the injuries that he was battling through, and I said something to him along the lines of, would you expect your teammates to give a little bit more, seeing what you yourself are playing through? And his body language was so telling. His words were, you would think. And then that same week, he had called out the offensive players for the way that they came off the field and sort of transferred, you know, they're coming off the field after a bad series while the defense is going out there trying to be charged up, and he just felt the offense was defeated. You know, there was frustration, obviously, but I refuse to believe that this is irreparable.
So,
I still think that there's an avenue and a path to keeping him.
And that's why, Didi, I'm like, man, I know this is uncomfortable for everybody, and I think that a lot of people kind of want to find a solution sooner than later so we can either hold on to him or we can begin to move on. But I'm like, man, you got to stall him out. You got to get to the new league year and see what you can do as far as free agency or a trade or anything you could possibly do, because I don't think any. I wouldn't want to be the one known as it. I'm sure Andrew Berry doesn't want to be the one known to trade for Deshaun Watson and then trade away Myles Garrett.
That's very, very fair. And obviously there'll be a lot of chatter at the Combine in a couple weeks, and we'll see. You know, there's an argument to be made, and I know that there are people in town. I've talked to some media members in Cleveland who feel, fine, trade him. Go get the two first-round picks. Get the two, you know, day two picks, maybe get four picks, do the eat the cap for the year. There's not a can't miss definite quarterback in this coming year anyway. But I don't feel that the Browns already went through that process, right? They already went through the 1-15 and the 0-16 and amassed the picks and did all that. I just don't get the sense that there's an appetite for that or even a feel that that's necessary. There are still a lot of really good players on this roster. And we've seen it. We've seen how quick in the NFL a team can kind of turn based on just a couple strategic moves.
Aditi,
where do you guys fall on
well,
this?
Well, I want to ask you.
I was ready. Once he said he wanted out, I was kind of ready to move. I love Miles, but I was kind of ready to move on.
So you're just like, good riddance.
No, not good riddance. That sounds mean. I don't want to be mean. I think that maybe it's come to the end of the line here, and I wish him well, and I'm ready to build. I'm ready to grind my teeth and get back to the work at hand and see if we can get this thing back on track the right way.
I will say this, and Lima, I know you have a question, so I'm really sorry, but very quickly I'll say, so I was a Pro Bowl and award winner voter, or I am a Pro Bowl award winner voter, and obviously I see things with my own eyes, I observe things, but I feel part of that process is also gathering as much information as you can. And so I called a lot of people in the NFL just to get a sense of, you know, let's say from offensive coordinators, who do you feel on the field? Who takes the most effort from you that you have to game plan against? Myles Garrett comes up number one from everybody, that there is no bigger game wrecker in the National Football League than Myles Garrett. So that's the one caveat here. We're not just talking about a great player. We are arguably talking about the premier defensive player in the National Football League.
How do you feel?
Go ahead, Lima.
Yeah, Dee, thank you. It's great having you on. How do you feel about the way that Miles went about doing it, dropping this huge bomb right before the Super Bowl all week, allowing other interviewees like Mina Kimes beg him to go to certain teams that aren't the Browns, and obviously the way that that could turn off the fans?
Yeah, I don't love it, but everybody has to look out for themselves, you know, to some degree. It's not, Miles has never been, and I really, really like Miles. Look, I was there when he was first drafted. I still have pictures of the first interview we did when he first got to Cleveland. He's never been, though, that guy that you feel sells out every single thing for the name of his team. He's always been an interesting guy who's got other varied interests, who isn't afraid to share those varied interests. He's not just a football, 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 Browns, 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 Browns sort of person. And so how do you fault him? You know, like, there's a very, very small window for these players to maximize their opportunity in the National Football League. For many, it's just about making as much money as they can. For a lot, it's trying to cement their legacy with individual awards. We heard Cam Newton say that he cared about his MVP way more than he would have his Super Bowl ring. For others, they feel that in the ultimate team sport, it's about winning a championship. For some, it's, again, Joe Thomas is and will go down as one of the best left tackles in history, but he's also going to be attached to the tag that he never won. 10 years he never won. And I think, if Miles is, again, arguably the biggest game wrecker in the National Football League, and I've said this, so I'll say this again. Miles didn't get my defensive player of the year vote this year simply because I thought it was way too difficult to reward a guy who was on a 3-win team. And I'm sure he is very, very well aware of that. From the minute that he was drafted, he's talked about wanting to be the best defensive player in history. It all plays into it.
So, Aditi, what we're worried about is this was the first phase. What the next phase could look like. Now, you're saying it's not irreparable. You could...
I'm hoping. I don't know that it's not. I'm just saying I'm hoping because of that. Did you kind of just burp?
No, I coughed. I have a bad cough. I'm sorry. It was a cough.
All right. Well, you know, in our house, when you burp, you say, excuse me.
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry. But I just coughed. I swear to God.
All right. You're talking about a second phase. I mean, Denzel Ward sitting here saying, well, if Miles is gone, then I want to be gone, too. That's not a good thing. He walked those comments back,
Aditi. He's the hometown boy.
Yeah, it was weird. The next day, someone must have talked to him because he really walked those back the next day.
No, it's still, he hits on the message. If your best player is saying, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, I don't see us being able to win a Super Bowl, which everybody wants to, I mean, come on, it's just the same way that you guys are saying you're excited. Every fan base, every team, everybody believes in the spring that the team has a chance to win a Super Bowl. But if your best player is saying, I don't see a path for us to win, that's not a good message to send to anybody.
I think that's why the fans are kind of, you know what, this whole thing, I think there's so many fans who are like, this whole thing must stop. Like, I played some Kelly Stafford audio earlier in the show, Aditi.
Okay.
And it's like, there are people who are just mad at me for even bringing up the possibility. It's like, okay, like, can you go out and try to get Matt Stafford? And I'm like, guys, I know it's a very slim possibility, but that's where they're at. Like, if they don't improve this position significantly and bring in a guy like Matthew Stafford or something, like this might be their last year. And while fans don't care, that's their mistake, not theirs. This is the reality we have to live in right now.
There's nothing wrong with a bridge. Right? We've already said that there's not necessarily a can't miss for sure 100% quarterback in this draft right here. And, you know, part of the Vikings signing Sam Darnold, if they thought Sam Darnold was their future, was their answer, they weren't going to be drafting J.J. McCarthy. Now, they believed in Sam Darnold, and there were a lot of people who in that Vikings organization who, wherever they were, felt very strongly about Sam Darnold when he was coming out, just that he was raw. And obviously, Sam Darnold didn't have a great experience in terms of teaching and growth and development, either in New Jersey with the Jets or in Carolina. And he took as much advantage of his time in San Francisco as he could, first one in, last one out, learning everything he could from Kyle Shanahan and that offensive staff. But there are guys out there, certainly, that fit the Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, maybe just haven't been in the right position, haven't found the right spot just yet, that if they're lucky, turns into a bridge to 2026, 2027, and wins, certainly, or maybe if they're even luckier, is someone who turns into an unexpected answer, like Baker was for Tampa Bay, or is, or like Geno Smith was for Seattle.
Well, could Sam Darnold be enough to maybe make Miles rescind? There's nothing really.
Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is going to command too much money. The Vikings want Sam Darnold back. I don't know if they're going to be able to swing the money to do that or want to. I think that they would feel fine about J.J. McCarthy getting another year of seasoning because of the way that he was hurt. I don't know that they want to commit as much to Sam Darnold as he may command on the open market. We're talking about second tier here. We're talking about, like, the Steelers. Obviously, it was a trade, but, like, the Steelers getting Justin Fields. And he's a young man right there that I would say, you know what, Justin Fields had really not good coaching for him in Chicago. And I can tell you this, that the Steelers staff was incredibly pleased with the way he worked, with his intelligence, with the way that he got better. The Steelers were 4-2. Those two losses weren't on him either. before they gave way to the mess, the drama, the whatever you want to call it, that is Russell Wilson. And there are a lot of people on that staff that believe the Steelers should have gone back to Justin Fields.
Wow.
But that's, you know, again, it's do you feel strongly enough about the coaching that you can offer, the development that you can do?
It makes me feel so powerless, Aditi, because when you bring up Justin Fields, I all of a sudden I go, well, should we go after Justin Fields? So now I'm just going lily pad to try to keep my Hall of Famer appeased.
You can. I mean, you could sit here. You could say Carson Wentz. You could say Jimmy Garoppolo. Ugh. You could say Justin Fields. Heck, you could even say Kenny Pickett.
Oh, okay? God, Aditi.
You know what? But this is the whole thing.
We're not saying Kenny Pickett.
But let me tell you, guys.
Not saying it.
That's fine, but guys.
Nope.
What you need to always remember with any player is you can't just look at his stats in a vacuum. What sort of coaching did he have? What sort of line did he have around him? What puzzle pieces were around him? And I would sit here and argue that, and again, I'm not sitting here being this like, oh my gosh, this is one answer, but the 2 years that Kenny Pickett had in Pittsburgh were arguably the most dysfunctional offense that I've ever been around in the National Football League in 15 years of covering the NFL. So I'm just saying that there may be a guy out there that you don't necessarily know. I mean, people had written off Sam Darnold as a bust. What did he win? 15 games this year? Is that what he won? 14 games? 14 games he won, and Sam Darnold was written off as a complete and total bust. I mean, I remember being at the CBS summit. We had all gathered, the entire NFL conglomerate of CBS had gathered for our summit in New York City when J.J. McCarthy got hurt. And I remember we were all standing in this room where they were serving us lunch, and everybody's conversation right then was, who's the backup? Darnold? Oh, well, their season's done. Literally, there wasn't one person that thought Sam Darnold was going to have this kind of year.
That's true.
And but none of us knew what he was doing in San Francisco. And I talked about this with John Lynch, the 49ers GM, when I saw him in the middle of the season, where I said to him, you know, Sam Darnold, we'd had the Vikings. We had the Vikings versus the Titans. And Sam had talked about the things that he had learned in San Francisco that no one had ever talked to him about, just in terms of reading coverages and what to do with that he'd never had exposure to. And so I was saying to John Lynch, you know, Sam was unbelievably effusive about his experience with your coaching staff. And John said, well, kudos to Sam. He was the first guy in, the last one out. As I just said, he took advantage of everything that he could. So you don't necessarily know. And again, I'll just use Pickett as the example here, because why not? He was just with the Eagles. Okay? They just won the Super Bowl. Kellen Moore, their offensive coordinator, is about to be named the head coach. Maybe he already has been while we are on the phone with the New Orleans Saints. He was with the best offensive line, the most well-coached and in-sync offensive line in the league. The things that you pick up in a building that functions properly, that functions well, you never know what's translatable to the next place. I mean, Baker talks about it, about those few weeks that he had in L.A. and how that revived his love for the game and that got his juices flowing again. So before you sit here and say, this guy's a bust, this guy can't do it, this guy sucks, at least think about what you are basing those words on.
So this, at least, this does, and I'm glad you're saying all this, it just cements me not moving Myles Garrett until, I mean, at least the draft. I gotta see what I can do at quarterback first and then see if I can talk him back into it. That's all. Aditi, we do have to go. I'm sorry. Did we lose you? Are you there?
No, I'm right here. I'm listening to you.
Well, you made me feel better, Aditi.
Really?
Yeah, hell yeah, you did.
Yeah, but I don't have any, again. There's no solid. I feel like I don't want to be backtracking what I said. I don't want to be promising anything because no solid information that this is just going to work, that it's going to work out. I'm just saying that personally, I hope it works out.
Aditi, we thank you so much for the time. All the best. We'll
Thanks
talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Yep. Aditi Kinkabwala on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, CBS Sports. Outstanding from her. Now, Daryl didn't get this earlier, but he was distracted this week. This is a new single that dropped Because that's how I
yesterday speak. That's how you talk.
Yeah, that's how I speak. This is a new single that dropped yesterday afternoon. Daryl didn't get it. Lima didn't get it. Owen and I got it. I wonder if Nathan Zagura can get it. Nathan joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Browns radio analyst. Nathan, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Ken.
Did you hear the music, or do we have to keep playing it for you?
No, I heard it. And what it was invoking, it felt like it was a derivative of the 1994 classic, Must Be the Money, performed by the great Deion Sanders. And so to my ear, those sound like the dulcet tones of Shedeur Sanders.
Got it.
Life is complicated.
You got it.
Count this payroll. Yeah. Girl, I wanna see you.
Outstanding.
But I'll see you later.
Yeah. It's outstanding.
Are there any Easter eggs in there about playing
this
for the Browns?
This is a guy who knows the draft. You got to know. And Mel Kiper don't know that, folks. Nathan, outstanding.
Mel Kiper does know that. There was one lyric where people were trying to twist it to where he said, I ain't got no neighbors, that was to make it sound like he was saying no Malik neighbors, not going to be a Giant.
Oh,
that's good.
Interesting. I said that he was on the beach. I thought it was Euclid Beach or Edgewater. That was going to be my little piece to it. Nathan joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, yeah, whether or not you like the song, that's inconsequential. Are we settling at a quarterback at number two there, friend? Mary Kay said yes. Daryl said no. What do you say, Nathan?
I think we, as long as, you know, it is the consensus of the organization that there is someone that is viable, then absolutely. I think until you have a quarterback in this league, you cannot compete year in and year out. And I think, you know, people, oh, it's safer to not take a quarterback. There seems to be a lot of fear around taking a quarterback. Mm. The Browns have picked in the top 10 14 times since 1999. They've only taken two quarterbacks, Tim Couch and Baker Mayfield. You have got to get that position. There have been plenty of times where the Browns have traded down or not taken a quarterback where there were tremendous quarterbacks in that draft. So I think you're in a position where you've got Joe Burrow, you've got Lamar Jackson in your division, you've got Mahomes, you've got Josh Allen in your conference, not to mention, you know, C.J. Stroud, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence down in Jacksonville, if they can get it going. So this is a great quarterback conference, and you need to compete. The one reason why the Browns have had, in my time with them over a decade, the best left tackle in the history of the game, the Hoff Joe Thomas, one of the greatest edge defenders, currently today the best edge defender in the league and one of the best of all time. Hoff said if he ever had to have one rep that mattered, Myles Garrett is the last person he would want to see lined up from him. You've had the best running back in the league for a four-year stretch, and you've had, you know, a top five, six cornerback in this league during that time as well in Denzel Ward, and you have had won one playoff game. And the reason for that is that you have not had a quarterback. And so when people talk about the draft, oh, it's much safer not to take a quarterback. First of all, there are no sure things in the draft, but the one sure thing in the NFL, and I've been saying this for weeks, is you cannot win without a quarterback. And so I've studied both of these guys, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders. A lot of people whose opinions I respect certainly think both of them are capable of leading franchises in the National Football League. And the Browns pick second. There's two of them. They're guaranteed a shot at one of them.
Well, Lima's going to fire away here in a second. But, Nathan, I've been saying it like crazy because we've had calls and we've had other hosts here like, no. I'm going, guys, the only way you can guarantee that you don't have a franchise quarterback is if you don't take a risk. I mean, they're all going to be risks. And, your backs are up against it.
Exactly.
We got this roster that is, it's not going to get any younger. And you're going to have to try it at some point. And I think the Cardinals have shown us, like, hey, if it doesn't work out, you can go back to the well. Yep. You know, I don't want to be so cavalier because we are talking about a man's career here. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now. That's kind of where the league is at, Nathan. You know it.
It is where the league is at. You have to have a quarterback. And if you look at the last two teams that picked second in the draft, C.J. Stroud, Jaden Daniels to Houston, Washington, respectively, they both went to the playoffs. The league is built for you to be able to turn it around. But to turn it around, you have to have a quarterback. And the Browns, after last season, which was a disaster, and you had certainly teams win games maybe down the stretch, they sit there now and probably say, man, I wish we didn't win those games. You have been given a life raft at the number two pick overall. The Browns certainly hope to never be picking number two overall again. And so you have an opportunity to get that quarterback. One of the things that's really happened in this league, and it's subtle, is that it really is an offensive league. It's so hard with the way that the rules are structured. It is so hard to be a dominant defense year in and year out. It is just a very difficult thing to do. But offense, that travels, and that has traveled over the last few years. And one of the things I looked at this year was at the top 12 scoring teams of the league, they go to the playoffs. That's just the way that this league works now. If you can score the football, you can go to the playoffs. What helps you score? Obviously, having an elite quarterback. Of those 12 teams, 11 of them had first-round picks at quarterback. The one outlier was the Super Bowl champion, Jalen Hurts, who certainly is a guy that's been a top-three candidate in the MVP voting. He has been sensational for them. He is an elite quarterback. They got very lucky. They were smart about it. They drafted a quarterback when it looked like they didn't need one, and he's turned into one, but they surrounded him with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and Saquon Barkley. But Jalen Hurts, in his own right, is elite because he makes your team start at first and nine. He eliminates 10% of the yards needed to gain for a first down just by his unique abilities. But 11 of them were first-round picks. 10 of them were picked in the top 12, and 6 of them were picked first or second overall. 6 of the top 12 scoring offenses in the league were quarterbacked by players picked first or second overall. You look at these things and you say to yourself, yes, this people are saying, oh, this is like the Kenny Pickett draft. This is not like the Kenny Pickett draft. Put on the tape, watch them. Cam Ward, I think if you look at both of them, more talented overall in the sense that he's got a bigger arm. He can make throws from kind of any platform. He's a little nonchalant with his footwork. He eschews the easy gain and tries to make chunk plays, but he is a chunk play machine. And then you have Shador. We can get more in depth, but just kind of top line, Shador is incredibly tough, willing to stay in the pocket and take hits and deliver the football. He was behind the worst offensive line I've ever seen in all my years of scouting quarterbacks. Absolutely decimated, and he is accurate. He's incredibly accurate. His ball placement leads to yards after the catch, and he is a good anticipatory thrower and a great decision maker. He sees things. His instincts for playing the position are great. And many people have said he's the best pure passer in this draft, even those who have him ranked second behind Cam Ward. Then you got Bucky Brooks, who thinks he is the best quarterback in this draft. So you've got two guys that in the consensus are going, really, you never see Shador get past pick 6. I think there's one mock where I saw him go 9th. It's not like we're talking about quarterbacks that would be in the 20s and 30s and you're trying to talk yourself into them. These are guys that everybody in the league, the consensus is, are going to be, you know, top 6 picks in the National Football League.
Nathan Zagura with us on the hotline. So I'm with you on basically everything you just said, but I do understand that we have people at the station who have just flat out said they don't think Shador is that good. Obviously, if you don't think he's that good, you wouldn't take him at 2. So I understand that, but I'm seeing what is getting close to a consensus of individuals that do this for a living. They all, at this point, have him as a first-round grade now. Now, some might have him a little lower. So Nathan, I keep seeing people say, well, in last year's draft, he would have been the 7th quarterback taken. He would have been in the Bo Nix territory. Okay, well, we're in 2025 in this draft, and I do think that he's gotten a lot better since last year. So to me, he's absolutely in the neighborhood of a quarterback you would take if you were sitting there at 2 and needed one.
So first, like Mel Kiper has both of them in his top 4 players overall. Daniel Jeremiah has both of them, I think, in his top 13 or 14 players overall. It's not like we're talking about guys that are a total stretch. And in my, this is my personal assessment. I watched 4 games on the All-22 and dug into Shador Sanders. And my assessment of him is, you know, when I look at the arm, good enough to make any NFL throw, even in tight windows, can flick it to the far sideline, no problem. Deadly accurate in the 10 to 20 range, plenty of arm strength to navigate the middle of the field. He's got a good compact over-the-top delivery, very high release point. He can throw very comfortable on the run going right or left. He can just throw it with a flick of the wrist. Good feel for the pocket. He'll drift left sometimes, and he drifts back at times, and that's something Cam Ward does as well, and I think part of that is just trying to make big plays. But he has good escapability. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is under duress all the time and usually gets away from the first guy. I think in the NFL, one of the things you want to see him do is take in structure, and that's what I tried to watch with Shador, break down plays that were the chaos plays, but then also break down in structure. When he actually had protection, he was in rhythm, in time. How good was he? And the answer is elite. And that's why I think he would fit so well in an offense like ours with Kevin Stefanski, you know, taking back the reins here. His accuracy is incredible. His anticipation is incredible. His toughness, he will hang in the pocket. He takes a beating, no bad body language, and his decision-making is elite. One of the things I was taught back in 2014 when watching quarterbacks, and for people who were out there, this was a piece of advice that was given to me and I thought was very good, is you take your pre-snap notes, run the play just a little bit, get the receivers, you know, maybe 5 yards into their routes and pause it again. Look at the coverage. You'll have a very clear idea of exactly what the coverage is. Knowing that, you'll kind of be able to tell maybe what the route combinations are starting. and have in your mind be like, okay, with this coverage, this is where the ball should go. Shedeur Sanders is a very good in those situations. He has one of the highest ratings in college under pressure and was one of the best, in fact, the best, when he was kept clean and got the ball out under 2.5 seconds. So there are a lot of things I see that I like. And I would tell people, you know, you go watch some of the tape stuff. You know, you go back if you want to, you know, against Colorado State, play 61 for the people that like to really get in there. Play 67 is an incredible play in that game. Against Nebraska, he took a beating and still was able to come back and make some big plays. And then in the Baylor game, 57, dime. Play 61, absolute dime. And then at the end of the game, he makes three unbelievable plays to get them in position to get into overtime and win the game. He can run kind of like Mahomes, not a plus athlete. I would say he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not going to run like that, but he's got the ability, if it's 3rd and 9 and, you know, they part C's, to easy go up and get the first down. So I liked everything that I saw about him, and I like kind of his demeanor. They say his leadership's incredible. We'll see. We'll see if that's what the evaluation of, you know, the people in charge are. But the notion that he – people say stuff like this all the time. I don't know if we get into kind of this, you know, oh, well, next year. Wait, we got to get Arch Manning. Anybody who has the first pick, if Arch Manning is what everybody expects him to be this year at Texas, first of all, I don't think he's coming out. There's no reason to anymore. He can stay there, be the king of the campus, make $10 million. They said all along he's a four-year guy, so now you're into 2027. But even so, it doesn't matter what you have. If a team is picking first that needs a quarterback, there isn't a trade package you could make that's going to get you Arch Manning. You have an opportunity right now, I think, to get one of two very, very talented quarterbacks, and you've got Kevin Stefanski, the two-time coach of the year, who's there because of his offensive acumen. And you just promoted Tommy Reese, offensive coordinator, who 2 years ago got the best out of Jalen Milroe at Alabama, and you saw how Milroe kind of fell back this year without him. So I think you have a good environment, not to mention Billy Musgrave, to nurture a young quarterback and really should be in a great position to succeed. So if you see elite traits, and Tom Brady loves Shedeur Sanders, and the traits he likes, toughness, decision-making, and accuracy, which in my mind are really kind of the three things you need to be a quarterback in the National Football League at a high level. If you've got those traits and you've got good coaching, good scheme, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to be successful and turn it around.
Nathan Zagura on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Yeah, I keep trying to tell people that about Arch Manning. I'm like, there's no guarantees coming out. Like, his uncle stayed.
It's a different world.
Exactly. He'd make money anyway.
Or more.
Yeah, so I agree with you. It's like, hey, if we're all putting it in the Arch Manning basket, like, you better be careful. He could definitely go back, and they could feel a million reasons why. Now, let me ask you this, because we got to be prepared for everything. And I know we're a little bit of ways out, and there's other situations I want to talk to you about, so I got to be quick with this. Who's the position player you like? Just give me a name. Say they trade out of it. Who's the position player that you like, not quarterback?
Oh, McMillan from Arizona.
Pep McMillan.
Love him.
Oh, you and your wide receivers. I knew it.
You knew it's going to be a wide receiver. You have to score the football.
I got to protect my quarterback, whoever's going to play, though, Nathan. Can I interest you in a nice Will Campbell? Come on.
In a week-in, week-out situation, as we saw in the Super Bowl, the two Kansas City losses, they were absolutely dominated up front, right? Tampa did that to them, and then in this past one with Philadelphia. The lines are critically important, but when you have a plus quarterback, when you have an elite quarterback, it is not as important. And I think that you need, in this league, you need more bang for the buck. Let's worry about getting actual stars and playmakers, and then we can worry about filling things in, because you know this as well as I do. In the time that I've been here, I think in two different iterations, we've had the best offensive line in football.
That's true.
But it doesn't translate to anything unless you have the quarterback and the playmakers. So I think that, to me, that's number one. Look, McMillan, he's got the size. He reminds me of kind of, you know, in that Mike Evans, Drake London mold. He can run, big catch radius, tough, makes huge plays. I think he would be a quarterback's friend on the outside. And all of a sudden, if you were to pair him with Jerry Jeudy, you know, I think you're, and that is a great tight end draft, and it's a great running back draft. I mean, it is an elite running back draft. So you have a chance, I think, to go in and really put yourself in a position where you've got two really good receivers, where you've got, and Cedric Tillman, and hopefully he can come back, because he definitely was showing some promise. You'd have two tight ends if you draft one alongside Njoku, and then you got, you know, hopefully Nick Chubb back, Jerome Ford, and then a draft pick at running back. And I think all of a sudden you've got a pretty good skill situation going on.
Real quick, real quick. Aaron Rodgers, where is he going to end up?
I say Pittsburgh, Vegas, or nowhere.
Whoa! Yeah, let Pony deal with him. All right, what did you make of the Trevor Lawrence stuff yesterday?
Liam Cohen took that job because he likes Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence isn't getting traded anywhere.
Would Liam Cohen... I'm thinking about a draft. I didn't think so, but I got to tell you, Nathan, it's like, I don't think this Ryan Burr guy would just make something up, would he? He's not going to make it up.
I mean, it was dismissed as ridiculous by the Jags themselves.
That's but he said he heard it from people with the Jags, and you and I both know Tony Khan. Things can get a little crazy down there, buddy boy.
Hey, he said similar things to me.
Well, maybe he's working him into a shoot. Maybe that's Tony Khan pulling off
a
work.
Nathan, you got anything more for him, Tone?
Well, just quickly, as quick as you can.
20 seconds.
Because we got to go, but, I mean, the Heisman Trophy winner, is he really going to play both sides? I think it undercuts his value, to be honest, at number two overall.
Oh, that's a long answer. You asked the wrong question.
I'll be real quick. I think he is elite at both. He has a chance to do something that maybe we've never seen before. I think it's very interesting. He's going to combine as a corner only. A lot of the people I talk to like him as a receiver who moonlights as a corner. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
I like that. Nathan, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you again soon. You know we love you.
You got it, guys. Love you, too.
Nathan Zagura on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Audio courtesy of the FanDuel Sports Network. What did they say to Tristan Thompson to make him do that at the end of the game? What on earth? Because if you didn't see the end of the game, and I wouldn't have blamed you, they were up by about 87 throughout the entire game. So if you missed that, the end of that game yesterday, they're dribbling the ball out with like 18 seconds left. Tristan Thompson has the ball. I mean, he's a victory cigar. And all of a sudden, he's just like, nope. And he dribbles through people and dunks it. Like throws a thunderous dunk down to make it from 129-108 to 131-108. And they inbound the ball with 4 seconds left. And Tristan Thompson, because they come in and out of the same tunnel, which is definitely a no-no in 2025. They come in and out of the same tunnel. So he goes walking by the Toronto bench. Horn goes, final goes up on the lower box there. Everything's over. And it looks like Tristan Thompson is just going to walk in the locker room. Somebody says something else. And then a near melee ensues as Tristan Thompson tried to take on all the Toronto Raptors.
We were just talking
yesterday.
He
tried to take on the cast of Jurassic Park last night.
We were just saying yesterday that we didn't think class was a thing in sports anymore. we were just joking about that, whether or not people care about whether there's class in sports anymore.
Jamal Sheed does from the Raptors.
Yeah, maybe they said...
He's the one that got up and... He was standing on the other side of the court. He was on the court, and he went over to Tristan and then followed him to make sure that he got his words into him, that's what started it.
So what? Somebody had to have said something to him. Did he just do that on his own?
Tristan was hyping crypto up too much to everybody up and down during the game. Seems to be his passion project these days.
Oh, that's interesting. Because like he's dribbling the ball, and then out of nowhere. It's like, did somebody say something? He's like, all right, bleep you. Like, what was it?
Well, normally it doesn't matter. I mean, there's chirping during all the games,
true.
But normally somebody doesn't do what Tristan did yesterday. That is such, and obviously he's Canadian, and, you know, perhaps he goes, maybe works out with these guys during the offseason. I have no idea.
Well, just because they play for the Raptors doesn't mean they're all Canadian.
Some of the guys live there. You know, some of the guys might choose to live there. I don't know. But
that's true.
I imagine
it seems like a nice city. I've never been there.
I imagine there's some sort of relationship there behind the scenes for that to happen, because it's so odd. Tristan, you know, he barely plays for us to begin with. He's been an afterthought. You know, in the reasons we thought you'd have Tristan was to play in some of the, you know, more feisty games, but he didn't really play against Boston. He didn't really play in any of those games. So he's just kind of a total afterthought on this team. You forget he's even on the team.
It was it was something. So we have multiple people on this. I'm going to get to Kenny Atkinson, and I'm also going to get to their coach, Darko.
We gave it a try.
Rajakovic.
Rajakovic.
Rajakovic. Thank you. They're a 17-win team, guys.
It's like Stojakovic, with an R.
Rajakovic. What was that again, Mitch?
Rajakovic.
Rajakovic. Darko Rajakovic. So here is the TSN call last night of Tristan Thompson's dunk.
Kenny Atkinson and the Cleveland Cavaliers is Thompson right at the, and the Blues ringing out to Tristan Thompson, getting the two-handed slam, a little bit surprising. 131 to 108, and Tristan Thompson now headed back, and there's some words here, and everybody trying to separate. Scotty Barnes saying something to Tristan Thompson, and Darko now standing that way. And this is one of the things about this building, like a lot, the teams actually head down the same tunnel. They do not go to separate tunnels, and we thought that Tristan Thompson would have dribbled that out. He did not, and the Raptors, and you understand it, they take exception to it. This game was won early on. They led by as many as 39. And who's in the building? And Thompson smiling now, kind of go, you know.
There is a part of the TSN broadcast. It's great. So right after that, he's walking off, and they show Donovan Mitchell, and he's got his hands up on his head like, what did you do?
The whole thing is wild that you would have it. I mean, the game, what, 39 points at one point? This game was over after like four Max Strus threes to start the game.
Yeah. There's another conversation right, there, but this is the bigger
one
here.
It's right before the break, so everybody's got – I mean, I imagine those Toronto guys, there's no all-stars on Toronto, right? Scotty Barnes not an all-star, is he?
No.
So those guys were all getting ready for vacation. They were like –
boy, remember when his career started?
You put us out of our misery.
That's true. You get like a week. They get a full week off, don't they?
Yeah.
They get until. I don't think they play again until next Thursday.
Yeah, the I'm NBA. Sure they probably got to be back Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah. I don't know. They're a 17-win team. Maybe be here Thursday morning. We'll take care of it.
You got to get one together.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because the 17-win team's probably
Would
thinking about
like
the lottery.
You get your face dumped on by the 14th guy on the
well,
team?
Well, that's why I'm a little.
Start off the second half?
Let me ask
I'm
you guys
a little
something.
Surprised. I'm a little surprised. Like, if there were the ingredients for Fist to actually get thrown, that would have been it.
Yes.
I'm a little surprised that everybody just walked away unscathed and it was a bunch of, hold me back, hold me back.
Is there any part of Tristan Thompson? Let me ask you this. Is there any part of Tristan Thompson where he, how did he unprovoked take a dunk? I don't know that yet. I'm going to get to these audio clips here in a second of the coaches. But did he throw down the dunk and think he was going to walk back to his own tunnel and that's it? And then he's like, uh-oh, I forgot. Like, we got to walk through the same tunnel here. And this whole crowd that's left is booing me. They are booing his face off. Just one person in the arena. The whole crowd is booing him. They hear the crowd. They're embarrassed. They're upset. And then he's got to walk right past him. Take some stones, my friend. Takes a set.
I told you, if my wife would have been watching, she would have taken Toronto's side on this.
She's un American.
Does not like Tristan Thompson. Does not.
This is still left over from.
Oh yeah, the residual of the cheating, and he's got three different baby mamas, and he was a serial cheater. Believe me, I've heard all about that. My sister knows about Tristan Thompson. She is no fan of Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my wife, not a big fan of Tristan Thompson. The women affiliated with his show,
yes,
not a big fan of Tristan Thompson.
So I think they might be siding with the Canadians on this one.
Of course, every guy on this show is like, hey, you know, that's his business. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know.
Know where the cameras are.
By the way, is Darko...
Just assume they're everywhere.
Is that their head coach's first name?
Yeah,
is
that's
Darko,
all
I'm just calling him Darko Milicic.
Is that like...
You get over 500, I'll call you by your real name.
Is that like John in Serbia?
I don't know.
I think so.
Probably. All right, let's get to the audio here. Here's Kenny. Here's Kenny Atkinson. Hit it.
Tristan, I'm not sure what he was thinking. Sometimes, though, you're playing the game, and you just have a reaction. I know in Tristan, there's no bad intention there. I think just sometimes you're playing, and you know, the goal of the game is to score, and just unfortunate.
You think he walked in there in that locker room and went, what the bleep do you think you were doing?
100% how that conversation went.
What was that? Here is damn it. Darko Rajakovic?
Let's call him Darko.
Rajakovic?
I believe it's Rajakovic.
Darko Rajakovic survey said.
I think what Tristan did there was no class and disrespectful. I'm not going to stand for that for sure. And I'm really glad that our guys, our players, they stood up for themselves. I love when my team stands up for themselves. That was no class act.
I got to tell you, he ain't pulling that move in Serbia. Have you seen those crowds?
I'm
being dead serious. They set fire to the seat, so you ain't doing that over there. No. So, yeah, well, there you go. That's one way to spice it up. That's why you got to watch the whole game now. Now I can't go to bed early. Got to watch the whole game. Who knows
what Tristan Thompson is going to do
when he comes into the game.
This is what I wonder, because I've told you that the Cavs and the Thunder this year are doing amazing historical things.
Yeah.
And they're not being talked about. And it's not that people don't respect them. People are like, the Cavs are good.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City's really good. Boston is still the favorite. I think unless that's changed, I think it's still been Boston has been the favorite. But the Lakers are getting talked about again because of their trade. Even Golden State, because they acquired Jimmy Butler, they are getting discussion.
Yeah.
The Cavs and the Thunder have just kind of been like, yeah, they're dominant. They're really dominant, but they're not interesting. Do things like Tristan doing that, and maybe if the Cavs start to really smell themselves, like Darius is trash-talking more than ever before. He has been letting fans know about it. He hits a game winner, and he gets up in the face. He gets pushed by Donovan into the crowd, and he's jawing with somebody who's sitting courtside. The Cavs, would fans here care if they become more interesting in ways like this?
No.
Because they're routing teams and kind of showboating.
Not Cavs fans, no.
You don't think fans like the showboating?
No, I don't.
They liked it when Baker showboated. They liked it
honestly,
when LeBron showboated.
Those teams were downtrodden when each of those took over. This is a good team. And they're likable. They're a likable group. And like everybody says, like, oh, they're so likable. They're so nice. Everybody says everything great about them. So I don't think that people would – I mean, it's their favorite team, so ultimately, like, yeah, they would be on their side. But I don't think people want the rest of them to be like that. I looked at it as them standing up for themselves when it comes to Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell or if Evan Mobley were to stick out his chest. It's like, all right, you're grown men. Stand up for yourselves. This – again, I want to try to give Tristan the benefit of the doubt because he plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but if we were the morning show in Milwaukee right now, we'd go, what are you doing? It's dumb. This is a silly thing to do. This is a silly, dumb thing to do.
I don't think any fan base, you know, unilaterally has a thought on this. I think there's always a divide. I think some fans love the showboating, and I think others can't stand it. And there's always a split. I think
it makes it more interesting
in all these. Like, right,
in general.
Like, do you even care that the Cavs have seemingly been kind of ignored? Not that anybody doesn't think they're good. Everybody says they're good. But you don't see, like, if you're watching a national game and let's say the Knicks are on or the Lakers, they're not doing break-ins for the Cavs results. They're just not. Like they're a total afterthought in the national discourse.
I mean, if they were a total afterthought, I don't know. Because if no one's disrespecting them, I don't think the lack of attention is a disrespect. Because like the Mavericks, they have all the attention in the world on them right now. I mean, they're talking about, did you see the whole thing about, well, now you can't bring in signs. Mm-hmm. And if we see signs, we're actually going to remove the signs, but we're not going to remove you. Like, they have all the attention ever. I don't want that attention. The Lakers have a bunch of attentions where it's like, okay, Luke is there, and that's amazing, but also Luke is going to sit out a little bit, make sure he's healthy, and LeBron might have not known, which I guess I might have to walk back some comments here on LeBron, because I didn't think they'd do anything without LeBron's knowledge, and I still want to say that. But he seemed to be not too thrilled, because it seems that now there's a hourglass that's starting to come to the end on his career, and maybe that's a realization in a way that he's 40 years old and they're going with a 26-year-old player that's going to give them probably another decade of great basketball and keep them competitive. I don't know if that's really attention I really need. I like having attention on the Cavs. I like being a popular team, but I just think that they are the nice team that everybody who covers basketball or talks about basketball or watches it likes. And I'm fine with them blowing teams out game after game. There's nothing. What other than this Tristan Thompson blip, which that's what it's going to be by 9 o'clock. We won't care. We'll have Brad Doherty on. Maybe we'll ask him. By 9:20, we won't care, and then that'll be the end of it. And it's great. The All-Star break's coming. We got guys in the skills contest on Saturday. We got the All-Star game on Sunday. We got guys in the All-Star game. It's great. It's a celebration of the Cavs. And I just don't think that a lot of Cavs fans are upset by the lack of attention, because I don't see it as a lack of respect.
Well, it's funny because I've dared do this over the years on certain teams, and this is certainly one of those teams where, like, can you envision them hoisting... It's still the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
It's the Larry now, yeah.
Why would they change it?
It seems like all names are up for grabs in today's
O'Brien
day.
I got to look into Larry O'Brien's history now. Hold on.
So is it, like, I've asked, can you envision in your heart of hearts the Cavs hoisting that trophy at the end of the year, the championship trophy? Have you dared to dream it? Because this team is kicking ass. I mean, the 66 wins. Is there in front of them? They can do all these historical markers.
What I told you, though, what I'll hate is if they do and they did go to, and if they lost to Boston, then none of this makes it even worse. Because, like, you're beating teams by 20 every night. And in all honesty, with the exception of a rare Tristan Thompson near melee, you could probably go to bed in the third quarter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're fine.
You don't have
probably
to watch these full games, no.
And if you get to this time and you just lose in like five games to Boston, or God forbid if you lost to the Knicks, holy Toledo. But if you lost to one of those teams, then man, the regular season just takes a big, big hit in next year, because now you've seen it all and you just need to get to the postseason. And I don't want that to happen. I mean, this is a lot of fun, even though they're basically fun first halves, and the rest you just kind of do whatever you want to do in the second half. Did Tristan Thompson disrespect his own country? That coming up at 8 o'clock. Speaking of the Cavs, real quick, Max Strus or DeAndre Hunter, who do you want to start? Max Strus or DeAndre Hunter?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought you knew my
answer. I'm looking right at you.
I thought you said Cavs fans.
There's new people that are listening.
Oh, okay.
Who do you want
to start? Hated on the radio every day for the last year and
or
a half.
DeAndre or DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah. I'm taking DeAndre Hunter.
Does it bother you that a lot of people are still team Max Strus?
I think they're team Max Strus until they aren't, just like last year where everybody fought me tooth and nail, and then after the playoffs, everyone's like, Lime was kind of right. He's not a very good shooter. He doesn't shoot well in the playoffs, and he can't really defend in the playoffs. Bigger, longer guys. So I feel like right now, he's...
Are you going to say these things to Brad Doherty at 9 o'clock?
Beaten up. Well, I'll make a case. What is interesting, what throws a wrench in it, admittedly, is that DeAndre Hunter has felt more comfortable in the past coming off the bench. But if we're playing Boston, I feel way more comfortable with DeAndre Hunter guarding Jaylen Brown than I do Max Strus.
I think it's easier. I think it's easier to keep Max Strus in the starting lineup, because I think we build loyalty to these guys. I don't want to take it longer than I want to, but here we go. I think we build loyalty to them. Like, I've said it, and there's been a couple of differences there where I've said, yeah, you know what? You got the core four. They've earned the right to go out there and either sink or swim and beat Boston and get to the NBA Finals and maybe win a championship or fail tremendously, and then we can talk about whether or not there's pieces that need to be moved. But damn it, they've played so well. I think that when you have these guys, it makes it very hesitant, makes you very hesitant to move on or to upset that apple cart. People like Max Strus. There's... something about him, Tone, that people just plays, Max Strus.
He plays really hard. He gets the most out of his athletic ability. People love that.
But the whole team plays hard. None of these guys are lazy. It's not like when Andre Drummond was here. Like, you can't accuse him of walking up and down the floor. So him playing hard. Sam Merrill plays hard.
When Yang
Tristan
was here.
Tristan Thompson was looking to get hard last night.
Can we say it now because he's no longer on the team.
Came out a different way. I'm sorry about that, but go ahead. I'm sorry. I distracted myself. Just keep going, but we'll move on.
People would accuse George Niang because defensively he just couldn't scramble around. But I don't think it was lack of effort. I think just George Niang's at a different stage of his career. And
let's be honest, and I'd love to have George on. Hopefully we will have him on here shortly, but I think he'd even admit, like, hey, lost 25 pounds in the offseason. He was a much quicker up and down player this last year than he was the year before. But they all play hard. So, giving me the Max Strus thing, like, DeAndre Hunter is going to play hard. If he's more comfortable coming off the bench, then fine. But I do think that it puts DeAndre Hunter in the driver's seat. And yes, I have to agree with you that that game against Boston, or the combined games against Boston, but especially the last one, had to be the one that hits the gas pedal on making the Hunter move, because Max Strus was a liability.
Yeah, and it's just...
And that's what you're playing for right now, is to beat Boston.
It's just, okay, I wanted Dean Wade in the starting lineup, even though he's not the offensive threat that Max is, but... I keep coming back to the one huge advantage that Boston's going to have. Really, they have it over everybody, but certainly you, when you have, you know, a small backcourt, and they have the guys that can kind of match up against you, even though Donovan does play really well against Boston, is that the minute you go from Max Strus to 6'8 and 7'2 wingspan DeAndre Hunter, now that advantage is mitigated. Now there is no longer the huge, huge advantage that Boston has. They'll still have, obviously, you know, Porzingis advantage there because nobody matches up against him. But I just think it's common sense.
Frank on the road, you're first up on the Fan. Hello.
What's going on, fellas? How y'all feeling?
We're doing well, Frank. Go ahead.
I'm kind of with Lima on this one. We got to kind of have Strus starting, you know what I mean? But we traded DeAndre Hunter. We lost Niang and LeVert. We also lost about 17, 18 points off the bench. And that's where he given us off the bench. And it's not like he ain't going to finish the games. Not even about, you know what I'm saying? Not when you start, where you finish. I know he's going to be in the fourth quarter, into the, you know what I'm saying, the clutch moments of the stretch. In the
so you want Hunter to start?
Oh, it sounds like he wants Strus to start.
You want Strus or Hunter to start?
I want Strus to start, you know what I mean? Because we still need that balance of bench scoring, you know what I mean? Just points off the bench. And he's giving us 18 off the bench. You know what I mean? We kind of missing that and with Niang and LeVert. Well, but definitely.
The only reason.
I would rather Dean Wade to start, though, cause for the size, but, you know.
I mean, he's got to be available, and I know his knee is getting better. We'll see what's after the All-Star break, but I'm sorry, Frank, I just really can't count on Dean Wade to ever really be healthy for
him. Yeah, that's the thing that stinks.
Me and you either, brother.
Yeah.
That's the thing that stinks.
We agree. Frank, thank you for the call.
Analytically, Dean Wade's defensive numbers are some of the best in the NBA and have been for the last few years.
Well, what am I going to do with the other 35 games of the season?
If you have Hunter coming off the bench and then you put him in 5 minutes into the game, and then you go, well, those are bench
really
points.
Yeah, really is at a start. Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, I mean,
do the bench points really matter in the playoffs?
Well, that's a good point, Owen, because I got to remind people, and I think people will understand once again once we get to the playoffs, it's just a different game. And Donovan Mitchell's not going to be playing 32 minutes a night. He's going to play 42 minutes
in close playoff games.
Yes, he is. Darius is going to go up to 39 minutes in a close playoff game. These bench minutes are going to be non-existent because the last thing you want to do is running your bench players against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Kristaps Porzingis.
Gosh, you're right.
Who's really getting bench minutes in the playoffs?
Ty Jerome.
It's going to go down to a 7-8 man.
And you need a backup rotation. Big man. Because Tristan's not that guy.
Tyson's going to play like 2 minutes, right?
If he plays at all.
If he plays.
Last night. And it's like, but they're all blowouts, so you can use almost any night. But here we go. Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus. 28, 28, 27, 29, 26 minutes. Amani Bates got 4 minutes. You will probably not see him at all in the postseason. Jalen Tyson played 17 minutes. Will you see him in the postseason?
Maybe. Hopefully you can get him in the first round.
At the end of the second quarter.
DeAndre Hunter's a yes. Remember, there's no Dean Wade right now, so you'll have Dean Wade. That's 7. And Sam Merrill, Craig Porter? Yes, no?
I think it's all shooting. Sam Merrill's going to be very matchup-based.
So 8, depending on the matchup. And if the matchup is he in against Boston in a matchup?
Merrill?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he came in and made 8. Some shots the
if
last
you
time
need
we played
to go
him.
Offense, right?
Yeah. So some of these guys that we've made arguments for, there's no need to make an argument for. I think one of the things that you have to pay attention to in the second half is you're going to have to try, and this is what sucks, is like you're going to kind of have to get your wind up in a way. So are you going to have to play him minutes that you don't want to play him? If you're going from 29 minutes a night to 43, like that's going to might take its toll. So I don't know some of their opponents, but damn.
The last two seasons where Donovan was playing 43 minutes all of February and March, and by the time April came around,
I think he's going to be
gassed out.
A lot fresher, but I'm looking at Donovan Mitchell against Orlando last year in the final three games that mattered, the 5, 6, and 7 games, 40 minutes, 42, 45. Guys, there's going to be no bench minutes.
Yeah.
So you got to play your best lineups. Now, analytically, their best lineups all include Max Strus, but that's not against Boston. That's just a different series.
I watched the hand get pushed down and the little guy.
Who is in Hudson? It just says number one. Who the hell is in
number
Hudson?
Number one.
Number one. Woo! In Hudson. Congratulations on all your success. You're next up on the Fan.
Yeah, this is Phil in Hudson. I'm not number one. I don't
Phil
know
in Hudson. No, you're number one to us now, buddy boy. Go right on ahead.
Yeah, you know, this who starts kind of thing, like, does it even really matter? I mean, it's the NBA. You can, you know, if Strus isn't playing well, you just sub him out. I mean, I would leave him in.
I think it mattered. It mattered last year to Darius Garland when we talked about him. People wanted to stick him on the bench, and I mean, we fought tooth and nail about that. I think it matters to some of these guys, yes.
Well, yeah, in the regular season, Phil, when their record is what it is, right now, no. It does not matter who starts any of these. You could bring Donovan Mitchell off the bench last night. They're killing these teams. But in the playoffs, if we're talking about a team that's trying to win a championship, yeah, I
hear you. You know, I would say don't upset the apple cart. And then, if Strus isn't playing well in the first couple minutes, then sub him out.
You'd have a quick.
But we got a new apple cart.
You like that analogy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, a quick hook. I get it if you say, all right, well, let's start him, and then he gets the quick hook.
But is that a plan, though? Because I don't want to – I mean, you're fighting confidence. Phil, thank you for the call. You're fighting confidence for a guy like Max Strus, all right? Do I automatically – well, if you miss a couple of shots, then I'm pulling your ass out of there and we're bringing DeAndre Hunter in. Then I'm hurting
psychology.
Yeah, so I don't want to mess with – because everything about this team is, hey, everybody's got a green light. Take the shot. Well, now if I take – that away from Max Strus, I'm going to hurt myself. Then he does just become a guy running around and trying to get in people's way. That's not what I need Max Strus to do. Like, he's not just an effort guy to go out there and play defense. Like, I do want him to shoot. Now, yeah, you can disagree all you want about how good of a shooter he is, but you still want him to have the green light. Jesse and Willoughby. All right, Uncle Jesse, hit it.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're doing well.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more just listening to you. You know, this team, they were put together. Now the goal is to beat the Celtics, right? I feel like the Cavs management feels they could match up with anybody in a series pretty well, except Boston. You saw the last game. When Garland and Mitchell start that game, all Boston does is keep picking and rolling and switching Tatum or Brown directly on Garland or Mitchell, and it's a mismatch. You have to start DeAndre Hunter in that series particularly to really and play them heavy minutes because you need that size on the perimeter because the Celtics, it's a one matchup.
Well, let me ask you this because I think you, I would agree with you, but they play them on the 28th. It's their last game against Boston before they would see him in the playoffs. Would you start DeAndre Hunter or would you bring him off the bench?
I mean, I'm going to start him in that game because
I'd bring him off the bench. I wouldn't want to give anything away.
Well, you don't want to give it away, but I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't want to put nothing on tape.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, Strus, when we get Okoro back, you know, he adds a little size, too, to add some defensive matchups, but you can't play him heavy minutes because of his lack of offense. But, yeah, I'm starting DeAndre Hunter, especially in that series. And I think Kenny Atkinson's smart enough to, you know, play the matchups. But if you're against the Knicks, he feels like it's better to keep DeAndre Hunter on the bench and start Strus, and so be it. But in that series against the Celtics, if you want to win a title or get to the finals, DeAndre Hunter has to play heavy minutes in that series.
Totally agree. Jesse, thank you very much for the call. The Cavs are beating the brakes off of everybody. They are 44-10. You might have lost count because of how good they are. And let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We welcome in Cavs analyst, Cavs legend, NASCAR owner, wonderful guy, Brad Doherty joins us on the show this morning. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning.
Let me ask you this. It's on the thoughts of everyone's mind. What happened last night with Tristan Thompson throwing down that dunk at the end of the game? It almost caused a melee.
Yeah, you know, I think Tristan was just having some fun. He didn't intentionally mean to do anything, but, you know, it's kind of unwritten rule. If you're beating somebody pretty badly, just from the air of sportsmanship, you don't shoot the ball at the end of the game. And it makes guys mad, and so Tristan was just having some fun. I think he was just in the spur of the moment, clock running down, chance to just dunk. He wasn't thinking about anything other than just having fun, you know, just finishing the game up, get ready to go on break. So he just rolls in and dunks it, and, you know, the Raptors, those guys took that personally, and a lot of guys do. There's a little, like I say, a little unwritten rule. You just don't you're beating them badly enough. You don't add whipped cream on top of the ice cream on top of the cherry. And, you know, you just leave it alone. So, but you know, and you could also look at it and say from a competitive standpoint, then just play better. You know, it is what we're not here to offer up. Being kind and concerned about the score. We're here to score as many points as we can and win the ball game. So I think it was a much ado about nothing, but it's kind of funny to watch.
Well, yeah, Brad, it didn't seem like anybody really wanted to get into it, but I love having you on because I feel like in your day and age, if someone pulled a stunt like Tristan did last night, then there could have actually been punches thrown.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it.
Would you have thrown those punches, Brad?
Well, I was not the guy. I would if somebody threw the punch first. You know, my thing was, like a lot of our guys, you know, you just pay them back during the game if they got the opportunity. You know, maybe that person is in the game and they drive to the basket and you just level them and walk away. But there were teams, you know, you think of the Detroit teams and some of those New York Knicks teams that they had guys who would punch you in the mouth if you did that. So a little different time frame, a little different era. But I don't think Tristan meant that in any bad. There was no malice to it. I think he was just having fun. Wasn't really thinking about that. And but I like to see the spirit from the guys in Toronto. I'm glad it's still there somewhat.
Brad Doherty joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The Cavs just got DeAndre Hunter. Bigger question for a lot of folks because this actually has to do with real basketball and winning. What do you think you would do with the starting lineup? Would you insert DeAndre Hunter full-time as a starter, or would you keep Max Strus there?
Ooh, you know, Max has played fantastic basketball and has really become a defensive presence for us. But, you know, the thing with DeAndre is his size. And, you know, I watched him in college. He was in Virginia, and they beat up on my Tar Heels pretty badly in 2019 when he was there. The thing that was interesting about him coming out of college, and the Cavs were looking at him really hard, was his defensive ability. You know, he was ACC Defensive Player of the Year. So coming into the NBA, his prowess was on the defensive end. And he's evolved into this guy who could absolutely just flat light it up, shoot the basketball, but he can defend at a high level. And I look at that sometimes and I say to myself, you know, we get to the playoffs and you got 6'8", 6'9", guy in the front line with Evan and Jarrett. Man, that's going to be a problem. So I'm glad I'm not coaching. I'll leave that to Coach Atkinson. I think it's a good problem to have because I like Max's energy. I like Max's ability to spread the floor with his shooting. But I like DeAndre's size, and I like the defensive presence. I think when you have to get a stop, you're going to have Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and DeAndre Hunter in that basketball game at the same time. And if you're the opposing team, you're not going to get a good shot. So I think we're blessed having all the talent and the depth that we have. And I think the rotations can be significant with either as him a starter or a guy that's coming in as a sixth man. So, but I don't think he came here to be a sixth man. I think he came here to start. So we'll see what happens that second half, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, Brad Doherty with us. That's great perspective because I've been getting into a lot of people about Max. And look, the analytics are on Max's side. All the lineups with him would point to a team that has been almost unbeatable when he is in the starting lineup. Of course, we also see numbers about when Wade is playing in games, what the record is for the Cavs. So all the numbers are pointing in the right direction for this team. I just simplify things maybe a little too much at times. I go back to the Boston Celtics. Who would they rather not see when they are going up against our team? And I think it's DeAndre Hunter. I just think that's obvious.
I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. He's very dynamic. But I think, you know, you play in waves. We got so much depth, so much talent. You know, there's the rotations throughout the game are the most important thing. And the starting is, you want guys to start and be there, but it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't because we play so many people. We play 10 guys. And the bottom line is who's in the game with 3 minutes left. That's what I look at, not who's in there the first 3 minutes. That's for talk shows and all that stuff, to talk about whose team it is and all that nonsense. I want to see who's in the game when there's 3 minutes and 45 seconds left on the clock. That's who I'm concerned about. That's what I want to see. And I think you probably have DeAndre Hunter, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen in there and you may even have Max Strus in there with him. You know, it's an interesting lineup, and we have a plethora of talented guys that can play. And like you say, Dean Wade has been phenomenal. When he's healthy, he has been a problem for the Celtics. So, yeah, it's fun. If you're a coach, like I say, you got a lot of pieces to this puzzle, and I like where we're at.
Brad Doherty joining us on the show. Of course, fans can stream him and FanDuel Sports Network's Cavs coverage on the FanDuel Sports Network app. Simply logging into the app using their DTC subscription or pay TV subscription credentials. So, Brad, Evan Mobley is a all-star. This is a great moment for him. What's that next step? Because I keep wondering, okay, is there a bigger step that he needs to take so the Cavs can get over Boston coming up this spring?
Yeah, I think that with Evan, it continues. You know, you got to, and this is a guy that would just be coming out of college, you know, and you got to continue to let him evolve just from a maturity standpoint. And I like what I see. You know, I think for Evan, it's now, you know, Kenny Atkinson has given him the freedom to handle the ball and to shoot the ball and dribble drive the basketball. And now I think all that gets tightened back up. You know, as we come back this second half, and the next step for Evan is being able to catch that basketball anywhere in that mid post and make an immediate move, explosive move that's unstoppable. Right now, he's catching the ball. He's setting himself up. He's being very physical. He gets to the front of the rim, and a lot of that's done in space. Well, as teams are scouting Evan, they're crowding him more and more. So how do you do that when you catch the basketball immediately, regardless of who's guarding you? And I think that's the next step. You know, I think the Boston conundrum comes down to how well we defend Porzingis. And, you know, he plays really well the few times he's played against us. And so how do we offset what he does? You know, 7'3" guy that shoots a ton of threes, pulls our guys away from the basket, you know, pulls Jared away from the basket. So I think that's what you're looking at. I think that's where we get over the hump is how we defend him. I think we play everybody else pretty much equally. But I think there's some matchups going throughout these playoffs that could be difficult for us. I watched this. I tell you, a lot of people don't talk about them, but this Orlando Magic basketball team, man, they are a tough out. You know, they've been injured. They've had a lot of significant injuries to Banchero, to Wagner, to all these people, to Suggs. But they keep beating people. And if you watch them play, it is a hard-nosed, grindy, gritty basketball team that Jamal Mosley has. And so I think looking beyond that first round, which we all are, we want to play for a world championship, I don't think anything's given. I don't know. I think we could have a tough time. I think Boston could have a tough time. I think it's going to be interesting to see who gets through this first round. I think the second round of the playoffs could be easier than the first round for the elite teams. So that's what I'm watching. But I think we have all the pieces. You know, Boston is elite when they're making baskets. I mean, they'll shoot 63 some nights. And that is hard to beat when they're making those shots. But I think where we beat Boston is when we start going into our rotations. When we go into our rotations, they go into their rotations, we're better. And that next group, the Ty Jeromes, if it's a Max Strus, man, hopefully we can get an Isaac Okoro back on the gun. We got to get him back. But anyway, those guys that come in, I think they elevate us, and that's what makes it an interesting matchup. So, yeah, we got to start putting those chess pieces in line, and it goes beyond Evan Mobley. Evan's just evolving into the player we thought he could be this season, but it's about we're the sum of all of our parts. That's the type of team we are, and it's not about one guy, which is interesting because in today's game, you know, everybody talks about whose team is it. All that stuff is, to me, is just ridiculous. That's stupid. I don't understand that. But that's what people talk about. I'm sorry if I hurt anybody's feelings. I don't care whose team it is. It's how effective are you? How effective is Donovan? How effective is Jarrett? How effective is Evan at what they do? And if you take any of those pieces off the floor, I think we're not as good a basketball team. I think Darius Garland has to have epic games against Boston because they go at him because of his size. They isolate him every time and try to get him into mismatches. That's going to be the critical matchup, not the Evan Mobley matchup. It's going to be the Darius Garland matchup. Who switches on to him and how do they post him up? Holiday posts him up. Tatum tries to switch on him and post him up. So we got to figure out how do we defend and help with a guy like Jarrett and not leave Porzingis wide open. So those are the conundrums we got to figure out with that Boston team.
Brad Daugherty joining us on the show. Okay, you are a car owner. It's part of why you're one of my favorites. You won the Daytona 500 in 2023 as a car owner. What's this week mean to you getting ready for another NASCAR season?
Yeah, I'm actually in Daytona today, and we didn't qualify well last night. We did not have the speed we thought we were going to have. Really not didn't trim the car out well. So we got qualifying race tonight, and for us and the way we race and my driver, Ricky Stenhouse, it's just – we just want to – it doesn't matter. If we're in that field with 36, we feel like we can win the race. So it's a long day, and the bottom line is we're going to try to make our way up through the field if we start 36 or 26. Hopefully by the time we make our first pit stop, we can work our way up towards that top 20. And then with about 40, 50 laps to go, we want to come to the front and get up in the top 10. And race. So I think we got a good shot. I think we can win the Daytona 500 again this Sunday. And I tell you what, we're going to try. We're going to go like heck and see if we can get to the front.
What's it like as an owner where it's like, all right, you end up, you go to like Martinsville or you go to Bristol. It's like, all right, your car get banged up a little bit, but it shouldn't get all the way torn up. And then it's like a race like here, Talladega. It's like, yeah, you could throw, how much are the cars now? I mean, you could throw $1 million right out the window coming up on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. I told somebody the other day, they were saying, what is it like owning one? I said, well, you know, I eat a lot of fried bologna. That's usually a weekly meal, owning one of these things. And when we won the Daytona, I ate steak for a week. What I realized is I kind of like fried bologna. You know, I'm an old country kid, so I don't mind it. So there's a lot of those days. Yeah, you throw... you throw $1 million out the window at Daytona and Talladega. It's gone. So you're racing for the glory. Obviously, we're not very smart business people, mess with these race cars, but we're racing for the glory. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday, I plan on holding another Daytona 500 trophy in one of those big goofy checks. That's what I'm looking for.
Brad Daugherty joining us here on the show.
So I don't own a boat, and I don't own a Daytona car, or I don't own a race car. Yeah, I can't afford it. Brad, I do have a question because I saw people were debating some of the most shocking trades in sports history, not just the NBA. And then people brought up the Ron Harper trade after Luca's situation last week. Did that compare at all to – were you guys that surprised? Was the NBA that surprised at that time?
That is the worst trade in the history of the NBA. Because it cost us championships. We were capable. We and you can say whatever you want to say, I've talked to Michael Jordan about this a couple of times, and he just laughs because he agrees. I mean, we were going to win championships with Ron Harper. We were on our way. You know, Michael hit the shot against us. That's great. It was a lucky shot. But we were a young basketball team. And we had everything. We beat everybody else. We could beat everyone in the Central Division. And that trade broke us down. We never recovered from that. And we had good enough pieces that even after that trade, we were contenders. But Ron Harper put us over the top. And that was the worst trade ever. I was sitting with Larry Nance a couple nights ago. We still – Larry, Mark, myself, Coach Wilkins, we still talk about that. I remember walking into the Richmond Coliseum that next morning for practice. And we used to practice upstairs in that hole that used to have asbestos hanging off the walls or whatever that crap was. And I was just one of the first ones there. And I went upstairs and I walked in. And I never will forget this. Lenny Wilkins was sitting in the corner with his hands in his head. And I walked in, and he looked up at me, and, you know, Lenny was such a positive, smart guy. He popped right up. He walked over to me. He says, "We got a lot of work to do." I said, "What's wrong?" You know, and he's like, we traded Ron Harper." And then he kind of straightened up. He says, "He says the Cavs traded Ron Harper." I said, "Oh, you're bullcrapping me." I didn't say bullcrapping. Mm-hmm. I said, "Bull." Mm-hmm. He said, "No, I'm not." I'm like, "How stupid is that?" That's the first thing I said. "What? How stupid is this?" And he says, "It's okay. We'll be okay." And we weren't. We weren't. So, you know, like I said, I've had conversations with Michael about every time I see him. I played golf with him a couple of weeks ago, and we talk about basketball a little bit. He loves our Cavs. He's watching us play a little bit. I gig him, you know. I said, "Man, if we could have kept it." He says, "Yeah, if ifs and buts."
Oh, man. So,
yeah, it's heartbreaking. And you hate it because you look back and you say, as old guys, we could have, would have, could have, should have. And it just doesn't – nobody cares about that. You know, nobody cares about it. You didn't win, so that's the bottom line. But it I think about it at least twice a week. It just bothers me because that was the dumbest trade in the history of basketball, in my opinion.
Well, Brad, I'm sorry to leave it on that note. We hope you beat Michael on the track on Sunday. You're a legend. Yep. You're beloved. Damn, I didn't realize that was all going to be brought up, Brad. I'm sorry to dredge all that up.
I'm living vicariously through this team, though. I'm having a great time. And President of Basketball Operations, Kobe Altman, and Mike Gansey, GM, and Nick Barlage and Dan Gilbert, they let me hang out with these young guys and be a part of this, and I'm having a blast doing it. So,
question about playing golf with Michael? This is a legend. You don't have to tell me, but I have to ask. Is it true if he goes, "Hey, you want to put something down on this?" And then you ask him, you go, "How much do you want to put on this?" And he goes, "Whatever makes you uncomfortable."
It's unreal. I'm a $2 Nassau guy. I could care less because these guys are idiots. That play with Mike. These guys are idiots. I don't know what they're doing. I have no idea. If I lose $10, I got a problem with it. I'm not even going to get into it because you wouldn't believe it, but it's unbelievable. These people are just out of their minds that play golf with him, and he makes it uncomfortable, and he loves it. He loves the juice, and just one of the all-time gamers. He just can't get enough. I can get enough. I'm good. I'm very content. I'm not very good at golf anyway, and none of us are. So I don't get it. Why are you betting all this money on golf? And you're not. No one's as good as they think you are. You want to go? You know, you're not on PGA Tour. You can't really play. But the ego and having a little bit of money gets in these guys' heads. Not mine. I'm good. I just want to beat you,
Brad. I can't thank you enough for the time. Let's do it again. Hopefully soon. Hopefully before the playoffs. Take care of yourself. Good luck Sunday.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
You guys have a great day.
You as well. Brad Daugherty, FanDuel Sports Network, Cleveland Cavaliers legend. You love him. You know him.